We're going to jump right in. I was thinking last weekend, we've got two boys that live in Salem, Oregon. So my family, we went down to Salem to go see them. One of them, it was kind of a belated birthday trip. And we're down in Salem, and we had a little extra time. And we're like, well, what do we do with our extra time? And so my wife pulls up her phone, and she's like, there's a Barnes & Noble. Anybody know what Barnes & Noble is? I know you young people, you're like, I don't know what that is. It's a bookstore.
A bookstore. They still have those. It was amazing. And I'm like we've got some of our kids, and I'm like, I'm not sure they've ever been to a bookstore. Like, it was awesome. Now, you go to a bookstore, there's all sorts of books you're going to find. And I found some books that I thought you guys would find intriguing, right? So one book was literally called Spam, a biography. Someone wrote a biography of Spam. There's another book called Nuclear War. What's in it for you? Like, that's a real thing. And then this one blew my mind. The title was Fart Proudly. And then it was Writings from Benjamin Franklin That You Never Read About in School. All right, real books. You are welcome to read any of those books on your own. Now, what's interesting, every time I go to a bookstore, I'm always surprised at the amount of self-help books there are there, right? Like, the self-help section is just ginormous. The self-help industry in America has grown to a $41 billion industry. And it's funny because you walk through that section, and all these books have this, like, promise on the front cover. This will change your life. Your life will be revolutionized. Now, I will admit, in my lifetime, I've picked up several of these books. In fact, I was thinking about this. I've been in leadership, Christian leadership, for 20 years. And I'm not, like, the most naturally organized person. Some of you, I am thankful for your skills because I don't have those skills. And so I've had to grow in that. So there was a book, Getting Things Done by David Allen, that was just, like, really good for me. It was some really good wisdom and useful tools to help me in my leadership. I'm not going to say it changed my life, but it was really helpful. Now, it made me think, though, like all these self-help books, how many of us, like, going through life, we're busy, we're overwhelmed, we're tired, we're all these different things. How many of us are searching for something? And so when that book promises to change your life, you're like, okay, I'm in. I'll give you my $15. I want to read that book because if this has a chance to make my life complete or satisfied, right? And we have nowadays you have these life hacks, you know, and it's like, oh, this life hack will revolutionize your parenting or your marriage or your life. And you're like, okay, I'll try it, whatever it is. You know, it's crazy because, like, we live in a day and age where we are busier than we have ever been. I mean, the amount of things that we have going on, we've got work and school and kids and the world, we are doing more than any other generation before us. And the thing is, we live in this day where we have all these technological advances. These technological advances that are supposed to make our life easier and faster and better. I mean, think about this. Like 20 years ago, when you left for work, you'd bring a camera with you. You have to have a camera. And then you'd have to have, like, a date book that had your schedule in it. And then you'd have to have a book that had all of your contacts in it so you know who to talk to. And then you may have to have a GPS to know where you're going. And then you may even have a cell phone or a pager on top of that. Like nowadays, we've got all of that in this thing right here. It's supposed to make our life easier, but what do? We scroll through social media. We will laugh at memes. We watch puppy videos. Some of you people watch kitten videos. I can't believe it. But we spend countless hours doing that. It's supposed to make our life easier, right? Smart technology. It's supposed to make life better. What's interesting is I did a little looking this week. With all this technology we have that's supposed to make life better, 35% of Americans are sleep deprived. One out of three of us in this room are deprived of sleep. Again, we have this constant access to news and politics and accidents and scandals and all these different things. Is it any surprise that our stress levels have gone higher and higher and higher? And then, like we live in a culture, and I'm not faulting it, but we live in a culture that we are enamored with true crime. Like, you go onto Netflix, how many of those shows are about true crime? And we binge watch those things. And then is it any surprise that anxiety is at an all-time high? In fact, when you look at our young people, one-third of our young people will struggle with an anxiety disorder. Like, here we are in our culture. We are busier than ever. We work more than ever. We have more entertainment available to us. Are we any better off than the people before us? I mean, how many of us look at our life and think, man, rest. Rest is a luxury. Like, I'd love to have luxury. I'd love to have that. I'd love to have rest. But it's like, you know, maybe if we can get on a vacation, maybe then we can rest. Then we can finally disengage and catch up. See, I think that our culture is caught up in a storm where we are searching and striving for purpose, for joy, for peace, for satisfaction. And we live in this culture that tells us you just need to do more, you need to achieve more, you need to accomplish more, 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 more. And if we're going to be honest, like, a lot of us have come in this morning and we're just tired. We're exhausted, physically, emotionally, spiritually. In fact, there's a book by John Mark Comer called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And here's a quote from that book. It says, tragically, we continue to chase after our desires continually. The result? We're in a chronic state of restlessness. At worst, there's angst and anger and anxiety and disillusionment and depression. All of this leads us to a life of hurry, a life of busyness. We're overloaded, shopping, materialism, careerism. Life, which in turn makes us more restless. And the cycle spirals out of control. See, I think that describes the culture we live in. But what's interesting is in the very beginning of creation, the very beginning of God actually gave us a remedy to our restless souls. And I'm just going to say this. I think today might be one of the most practical and most important messages you are going to hear about God's gracious gift of a Sabbath rest that leads us to peace. So we're in a sermon series that we're calling Origin Story, where we're looking at the first 11 chapters of the Bible, first 11 chapters of Genesis, where we see the beginning of creation, we see the beginning of humanity, we see what's wrong in our world. You want to know what's wrong with your spouse, or what's wrong with your boss, or what's wrong with your kids? The answer is in this series. We're going to see all of those things. We were 3 weeks in. We saw the very first week. We saw Genesis chapter 1. We talked about how it's not about creation. We want to make it about, oh, how old is the earth and all these things. Now, Genesis 1 has given us to know the creator, not necessarily how the creation came about. We saw that in creation, we see the characteristics of God on display. And these things we read about, how God created, should lead us to worship him, admire him for who he is and what he's done. Last week, we saw how us, mankind, as broken as we are made in God's image, in his likeness, which gives us incredible value. The fact that imprinted on us is the image of God. And today, we're going to see what God does after he completes the creation story. We're going to see that God takes this Sabbath rest. And this Sabbath rest is not just a life hack. It is a gift that God designed from the very beginning that can literally change our lives. So Genesis chapter 2, I will say we're kind of in Genesis chapter 2, because this first verse, one of the things to understand about the Bible is the chapters and the verse divisions, they were added many centuries later. They were added by a guy by the name of Stephanus in the 16th century. And while the chapters and verses are beneficial for us to know where we are and what we're looking at, they're not necessarily inspired by God. They weren't part of the original. So actually, a lot of scholars think chapter 2, verse 1 could have been the end of chapter 1. I digress, whatever. And so here's what it says. Chapter 2, verse 1. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all of the host with them. Which means God's creation was finished. It was completed. There wasn't anything left to add. It's not like God finished everything, finished mankind on day six, and woke up the next day and was like, oh man, I forgot to make unicorns. I got to go back and do. No, God was finished. It was complete. His creation work was nothing left to add to. Right? So he finishes that creation work. In verse 2, on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. Now, I hear this, and I'm like, all right, God did all this stuff on the 6 days of creation. The seventh day, he rested. Why did God rest? Was he tired? It was a lot of work doing all that creating stuff. I mean, well, of course we would say that God couldn't be tired. God is omnipotent. God is all-powerful, right? God doesn't need a nap. He doesn't get tired. So why did he rest? Well, the key is this word rest in these two verses actually comes from the Hebrew word sabbat, which simply means to cease. It means to cease. This is where we actually get the word Sabbath, comes from this word sabbat. So basically what we're really reading is after these 6 days, on the seventh day, God ceased to do anything else. He ceased his creation work. And what happens is here in the very beginning of humanity, the very beginning of the earth, God is setting up a rhythm of a Sabbath rest. That for 6 days we work. For 6 days we make a living. For 6 days we take care of the house. For 6 days we do the garden. For 6 days we do the grocery shopping. For 6 days we do all those things. On the seventh day, God said it's a day of rest. It's a day to cease. It's a day to stop. It's a day of Sabbath. And again, why does God do this? Again, God doesn't need the day of rest. Why does God choose to rest? Because he's modeling a pattern for us. See, we're not God. Now, we like to think we're God. We like to play the role of God in our life. I want to be in control. I want all the power. I want to decide who I do and what I do and all those different things. But the reality is we're not God. We have limitations. We have needs. And God, out of his love for us, he establishes this Sabbath day, this day of rest, this day for us to simply stop and be and to cease. Now, what I want to do this morning is, there's a lot of things we could talk about when we come to Sabbath. So what I want to do is I want to give us a theology of what the Sabbath is, so we understand this big idea of this gift that God has given to us. Then after that, we'll conclude, and this is where I think this may be revolutionary for some of us in this room, is I want to give us some practical tips on how do we Sabbath well? How do we find rest? How do we find that spot where God leads us to peace, where we don't have to live in the busyness of our world? So, theology of Sabbath. Number one, Sabbath is not just a day off. It is actually a day to the Lord. I mean, I think we'd all say days off are good, right? Anybody like a day off? Yeah. Like, our society typically gives us 2 days off, typically. And usually, what do we do on those days? Those days off, we catch up on everything else in life. We do the grocery shopping, we clean the house, we take care of the garden, we do all of our chores, we might do a project around the house, we might get our taxes done. Like, we have all these things that we do, or we get to our days off and we're like, man, let's go up to the mountains, let's go fishing, let's go to the lake, let's do these different things. But notice, this is what it said in verse 3. It said, God blessed the seventh day and made it holy. See, when God says holy, it means it is set apart. It means it is different. It is better than the others. Now, all of the days of creation were special. All of the days of creation, they show us how awesome God is, how he is all powerful and unimaginable and intelligent. We see his grace and love in creation. But what's fascinating is none of those days does God call holy. Only the Sabbath day does he call holy and set apart to God. Now, do we find rest on that day? Yes. Do we get to enjoy the creation that God has given us? Yes. But the key is all of these things should be dedicated to time with God. Right? I mean, think about this. Think about like the whole creation story, right? God creates the whole world and everything in it, right? Then on the sixth day, God creates man. He creates Adam. And Adam is very first full day, created on the sixth day. His first day is the Sabbath. And I don't know about you, but I picture in my mind, like what did Adam do on that first Sabbath day? My mind goes to, like, I don't know, God and Adam, they probably went up maybe to the lake, maybe up on the mountain, sitting around a fire, and God's telling him about this creation. Now, let me tell you about all the things. Let me tell you about light. Let me tell you about the sun and the moon, the stars. Let me tell you my mistake in creation, I'm making cats. Like, I don't know what I was thinking at that point. Like let me tell you all these things. And I picture Adam being like, amen, man, I don't know. No, I picture Adam just sitting in this and being like, God, this creation is amazing. God, you're wonderful. You gave us this whole thing. You made this for us. I picture Adam just enjoying the company of God. You see, we need to recognize that like the Sabbath day is not just a day off. It's not a day for us to catch up on all the other things or to go on a vacation. The Sabbath is a day to the Lord. That if we want to find rest for our souls, man, it's found not just in a day off. It's found in a day dedicated to the Lord. In fact, Jesus affirms this very idea. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 11, he says, come unto me, all who are weary and heavy laden. How many of you feel weary and heavy laden this morning? Yeah. He says, come unto me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gently and lowly of heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Do you hear what Jesus said? Where's rest for your souls? Is it found in a day off? Is it found in going to the mountain, or is it found in me? It's found in him. This is such a big deal that if we're going to enjoy the rest that God has given us, it's not just from a day off. It's from a day off that we are communing with God. Number two this morning. Sabbath is not just a suggestion. It's actually a commandment. Right, you can look in Exodus chapter 20. This is a story of the Ten Commandments, right? Story of the Ten Commandments. Moses goes up to the mountain. He's meeting with God. He's got this time with God. And God gives him the Ten Commandments. Now, we read those commandments, and a lot of those are moral commandments. They make sense, right? Thou shalt not murder. We get that. That makes sense, God. Thanks for telling us that. Thou shalt not steal. We get that. That makes sense. But then he throws in this other commandment that, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. And I look at that, and I get the murder thing. I get the lying and the stealing. But equal on seriousness of those things is this commandment to remember the Sabbath day. And I'm like, come on, God. Like, the Sabbath day doesn't seem as big of a deal as murder and lying and stealing. But to God, it is. To God, it's saying, listen, this is something I've done for you. It is a gift to you, and if you refuse to do it, you are going to suffer. In fact, this is interesting, I think. All the other commandments begin with, thou shalt do this or do that, right? Thou shalt not murder, thou shalt not steal. But this commandment, number four, he says, remember the Sabbath day. See, he's pointing back to creation. Saying, no, I set this idea of Sabbath from the very beginning, that there's this day that we cease, there's this day that we dedicate to the Lord. This is why I think the fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day, is the oldest commandment there is, because God gave it to us in creation. So number one, Sabbath is a day to the Lord. Number two, Sabbath is not just a suggestion, it's a commandment. Now this next one, I will say, do you ever like read the Bible? You're reading the Bible and you're like, man, I've read the Bible. I've read this so many times. And all of a sudden, like one verse just like jumps off the page at you. And like there's blinking lights and sirens going off. And you're like, whoa, look at me. Look at me. I've never seen this before. Well, that was me this week. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, you know, this is another telling of the Ten Commandments. Deuteronomy 5 verse 15 says this. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. And the Lord your God brought you out of there with a strong hand and outstretched arm. This is why the Lord your God has commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. You see, the third thing is a Sabbath day is a day for us to remember what God has done for us. It is a chance for us to remember our salvation. Like I don't know, like if you're not familiar with the story of Exodus, all right, here's what happened. God's people were slaves in Egypt for 400 years, a long time. And one day, they just walked out free. And the question is, well, how do they walk out free? What did they do, right? Did they have like a political riot? Did they charge the capital? Like, what did they do to free themselves? Was it their wisdom? Was it their grit and determination? No, God's like, you didn't do a darn thing to get out of Egypt. I did it. I led you out. I gave you freedom. And so God is telling the people, listen, I want you to remember what I've done for you on the Sabbath day. Remember, I got you. Remember, I'm the deliverer. Remember, I'm the provider. I'm the sustainer. Your salvation, your freedom, your healing. You have those things not because you're smart and not because you're capable. You have those things because I have given them to you. I'm the source of those things. This is huge. And he actually instructs us on the Sabbath, remember what I have done for you. In fact, in Genesis chapter 2, our text we read this morning, like my favorite word is in verse 1, it says, when God finished his work, finished, completed, nothing else to add. When God finished his work, that word finished, where else do we see that word finished in Scripture? Well, in John 19, Jesus had been arrested, he'd been falsely accused, he'd been beaten and whipped, and then he was hung on a cross. And on that cross, he's taken our sins upon himself. He's taken our wrongs upon himself. He's suffering in our place. And as verse 30, he says, it is finished. And then he gave up his spirit. What was finished at that point? It was a work of redemption. It was our salvation. That God, through Jesus, he finished our salvation on that cross. There's nothing else to add, right? Do you understand this? Like in salvation, like when we come to God, we don't come to him and be like, look, God, I have all this to offer you. No, we come to him broken as sinners. We don't have anything to add to salvation. He did it all on the cross for us. He says, it is finished, means there's nothing else to add to it. I've accomplished your salvation. It's all about him. And so when we look at this idea of a Sabbath day, it's a day to remember, man, it's not about me. It's not about me doing all these things to be great and wonderful and to achieve. It's a day about what Jesus and he's done for me. He's the one who saves. He's the one who redeems. He's the one who provides. He's the one who opens doors. He's the one who gives second chances. He's the one who heals. He's the one who accomplishes. And this is an opportunity for us to stop our busy lives of doing and achieving and simply to say, man, God, look at what you've done. I'm here today, God, because of what you've done for me. In fact, I think the Sabbath day is really all about trust. When God commands us to take a day of rest, to take a day to stop achieving and simply be with him, it's simply a matter of trust. I mean, why do we feel the need to frantically do everything and try and control everything around us? Any of us guilty of that? You feel that weight? Man, I gotta control, I gotta get everything just right. Why do we do that? Because we think it depends on us. We think our success comes because of our strength and our wisdom and our knowledge and our accomplishments. This is why we're stressed and overwhelmed and anxious, because we are gripping so tightly onto life. We're gripping and trying to make everything work out. We're gripping so hard trying to make our work a success and our financial future a success and our kids a success and all these things. We're working so hard and we're tight-fisting. We're like, oh man, this is not restful. This is exhausting. Psalm 127 says, unless the Lord builds the house, listen to this, those who labor build it in vain. Is that a word for any of us in this room? Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. In vain do you rise up early and go late to rest, eating the bread of anxious toil. Do you know what he just said? In vain we do those things. In vain we run ourselves ragged trying to accomplish everything. Because unless the Lord builds a house, we're just laboring in vain. We're wasting our time and our effort. See, what happens is we come into church and we talk a big game. Oh, I trust God. Oh, but my faith is in him. I trust him for everything. But then when he says, hey, what if you take a day off? We're like, I can't do that, God. Like, I'll trust you here, but I'm not going to trust you to actually take a day to stop achieving and simply to be with you because, God, I've got, you know, I can't let go. And maybe our willingness to trust God with the Sabbath, maybe that's kind of the defining line on whether how much we truly trust him or not. In fact, there's sometimes we talk about this tithe promise. You know, Bible, it talks about giving a tithe, a 10th percent of what you make to the Lord. And I think there's this promise that God would say, if you trust me with that 10%, God would say, I can do more with 90% than you could ever do with 100%. And you're like, that doesn't make sense, God. And God's like, that's because I'm God and you're not. Right? And I think it's the same thing. Do we trust that God can do more with our 6 days than everybody else can do with 7? And it seems to work for Chick-fil-A. It's a trust thing. Do you trust God enough to say, all right, God, I will cease trying to accomplish and have a day where I will simply be with you? Last thing. Sabbath is actually a gift. See, what happens, and this happens with the people of God, I don't know why we get so confused about this, is we take what God asks of us, and we were like, all right, let me break it down to a rule, right? Just give me some rules that I have to follow, and what do I have to do? God's people have done this for forever, right? They take the good things of God, and we're like, what do I have to do? We make it cumbersome and difficult. In fact, when I was growing up, I grew up in a religious household. It wasn't a Christian household. It was a religious household. And we had all these rules about the Sabbath. So we couldn't go to a restaurant or a grocery store on the Sabbath. Because if we did that, we would make somebody have to work. And they can't work on the Sabbath, so we couldn't go to a restaurant. I couldn't go and play with my friends on the Sabbath. It was like, no, you can't go play with your friends. You have to sit and just think holy thoughts and just do nothing. Well, in Jesus' time, the Jews, man, they did the same thing. They had all these rules to the Sabbath. You could only take so many steps, because if you take more, if you walk further than you're supposed to, man, you're breaking the Sabbath. You couldn't take a bath, because what would happen when you get out of the bath, if you spill water on the floor, somebody's going to have to clean up that water, and that's work, and you can't do that, right? Is that really what the Sabbath is about? A list of rules, hey, don't do this, don't cross this line. Is that what the Sabbath is about? See, there's a story in Matthew chapter 2 where Jesus is walking with his disciples, and they're plucking the grain off the field. And the religious people are like, hey, you can't pluck the grain because that's work, and you can't work on the Sabbath. Jesus, what are you doing? Don't you love God? You say you're the Son of God, but you're breaking the Sabbath? And Jesus' response, verse 27, Mark 2:27. Jesus said to them, Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. See, do you realize that this idea of a Sabbath rest, a day to cease, do you realize that is a gift from God for you? That we think about this life we live and how full it is and how much we have to do and all these things. Like, God looks at you and says, listen, I love you. I don't want you to be stressed and overwhelmed. So I'm going to give you this weekly rhythm, this weekly pattern of simply rest, of breathing, of enjoying the creation, of not having to accomplish and not having to get the to-do list done. It is a gift from God. And you know how good that is? Do you know some of us, so many of us, are struggling through all these anxieties and worries and fears and all these things, and we're spun so tightly, and God's like, here, this is my gift to you. Would you take it? Would you take it? It's a gift for you. In fact, here's our summary for what this passage is all about. That the Sabbath is a gift from God to give us rest for our souls and to deepen our trust in Him. And this is what the Sabbath is. It's a gift from God meant to give us a day of rest, to give us rest for our souls and to deepen our trust in Him. Now, I told you what I'm doing this morning is we're going to give a theology of Sabbath, and we're going to kind of get to some practical application. What does it actually look like for us to practice a Sabbath? And I'm going to say there's a link on our website that we're going to throw up. There's a lot more information I put on there, so you are welcome to pull that up this week and check that out. I want to be clear, when I talk about Sabbath, Sabbath simply means it's a day that we're going to choose to cease accomplishing. It's not about doing things. It's not about getting a list done. It is a day simply to focus on being. It's not about doing. It's simply about being. The goal is that we would take one day during our week. And let me be clear, it can be any day of the week. In the Old Testament, man, it was the seventh day. It was on Saturday. That was their Sabbath. In the New Testament, that shifted to Sunday, the Lord's Day, commemorating the resurrection of Christ. And so I think that tells me, like some of us, it makes sense for Sunday to be our Sabbath. I mean, that makes sense. But some of us were like, man, I work on Sundays. I got other things. So I'll tell you, for me, my Sabbath is on Friday. And it's a day I intentionally choose to say, this is a day I try and be present with my family, be present with the Lord. So it doesn't have to be a specific day. Choose a day that works for you. Second thing with that, it takes a little bit of planning. You gotta plan ahead. It doesn't happen on its own, even with the best of intentions. If you're going to have a Sabbath day of rest, man, you've got to do a little bit of planning and thinking ahead. This is what we're going to do. This is what it's going to structure. Here's what it's going to look like. And so as you think, and here's where we're going to get just more practical. As you think about what does it look like for you to take a Sabbath, a day of rest, there's four words I think will shape how you Sabbath. Four words that I love for you to think about. Again, there's more information on each of these on our website. You can check that out, restorationyakima.com/Sabbath. But the first word to help shape your Sabbath is simply the word stop. Simply this idea, hey, we're going to cease. We're going to stop some things. We're going to make a decision that as busy and crazy and hectic as life is, we're going to make a decision to stop a few things, right? Which means we're going to make a decision not to work. Which means we're not going to check our email. Which means we don't have to respond to every text message that comes through. You don't. The world's not going to fall apart if you don't respond to a text message for a few hours. Ceasing means I'm going to choose not to worry about the to-do list of the house. That maybe the laundry didn't get done. That's okay. It's not the end of the world. We're going to choose to cease trying to accomplish things. Man, and I'll say this. Like, we live in a technological age, and I think maybe one of the healthiest things you can do is on your Sabbath day, cease from this stupid thing, right? Turn it off, put it in your bedroom, and put it away. Again, the world's not going to fall apart if you don't respond to every text message. And the world's not going to fall apart if you don't see every notification that comes on social media, right? I mean, here's what we do. We live in this age where we are so tired, we're running ragged, and what do we do when we have a little bit of time? We scroll on social media, or we binge watch something on Netflix. Are those things actually filling to you, or are they just mind-numbing activities, distractions from life? No, we're going to avoid mind-numbing things. We're going to choose to stop and cease some of those things that aren't necessarily filling to us. Second word to shape your Sabbath is rest. That we're going to be intentional to choose some things that are restful. Not just distractions. We're not talking about scrolling through social media. We're talking about some things that actually give us rest. And I'll be honest, it's going to look different for every person, right? For some of us, we just need a nap. And guess what? You have permission to take a nap. you have 100% permission to say, it's my Sabbath, I'm going to take a nap, I'm going to take a rest. Maybe for you, resting is journaling, or reading a book, or taking a hot bath, or drinking some tea, or going for a walk. What are things that are just relaxing and restful to you? You gotta think about that ahead of time. That's why you gotta plan ahead. Yeah, I'm gonna choose to do this. Third word, shape your Sabbath, is the word delight. See, in the story of Genesis, it says God Sabbathed after the 6 days of creation. On the seventh day, he Sabbathed. And I don't know about you, but for me, as I picture that, I picture God gets to the seventh day and he's like, hey, I created all these things. Now I'm just gonna sit back and enjoy them. I'm gonna enjoy the sunrise. I made that sun. I'm gonna enjoy watching the birds fly and the dog chase the cat. Like, I'm gonna enjoy the things that I created. In fact, Tim Keller, who's a pastor, said, because our world is full of ugly things, we need the Sabbath to feed our soul with beauty. How do we begin to delight in the things that God has given us, the gifts that he's given us? Again, there's more on the website. I wrote down a few practical things. I think one of the best things you can do is do a Sabbath meal. Just have a meal when you're like, hey, I'm going to get together with the family. We're going to invite some close friends over, some people that we enjoy, and sit around a table with some good food, some good conversation. Don't forget dessert. You need dessert. It's Sabbath. Calories don't count. You can enjoy that again. And around that table, you have this intentional conversation. Hey, we're going to read a psalm together. We're going to pray over our meal. We're going to talk about the highlights from the week. We're going to just celebrate the things that are good in life. Delighting in the good things God has given you. Man, maybe that's not your thing. Maybe it's going for being out in nature, going for a hike, going for a walk, not to burn calories, but just to be outside. Maybe it's going to fishing. Maybe it's going to a coffee shop with a friend. Maybe for you, it's reading a book, going for a drive, doing a puzzle, watching a sunset, listening to some good music. All things that lead to us delighting in the good that God has given us. Man, God, you're good. You've given me these things. They're wonderful. Thank you, God. Fourth word to shape our Sabbath, worship. Again, it's not just a day to relax. It's not just a day to have fun. It's a day holy to the Lord, to reorient our hearts and our lives with God at the center. Which is why it makes sense for us to Sabbath on Sunday, because we have the chance to come together with the people of God and worship God together. Man, so like, what draws your heart to worship? Church, reading some scripture together, some worship music, writing in a gratitude journal. Man, like these things are practical. But we got to recognize, like, this is a gift that God has given us, and we live in a society that we're overwhelmed with everything going on. And I tell you what, I think that if we made a decision to say, man, I'm going to do this, I'm going to dedicate myself to honoring the Lord, to honoring a Sabbath in my week, I think the Lord would do some things in your life that you wouldn't even imagine. Rest, peace, joy. That your other 6 days would look different because you have this opportunity just to be with the Lord, to reorient your life. And I'll close with this, the words of Augustine. He said, our hearts are restless until they find rest in him. The Sabbath is good. The opportunity for us to cease, to reconnect with the Lord, to experience rest. It's a gift. It's one that we lack so much. It's one I can't say enough. I hope that you will put this into practice.